Blog Talk Radio. Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist, and I'm calling from my cell phone today, trying to make it in to do the show. And once again, I'm kind of on a wing and a prayer today. That's kind of, we've switched positions with that today. Hi, Kate. You were prepared and ready.
Let's not stretch it too far, but I'm here. So my name is Kate Hensler, and I'm a developmental interventionist, and I work with First Steps with kids with developmental delays who are from 0 to 3 years old. There, I've done my intro, Laura.
That's good. And Kate's going to kind of take the lead a little bit so I can get in and get going. But today we're going to do something a little different. We are reading emails that I've gotten from the website at teachmetotalk.com. And we're just going to read some of those questions today and talk through some of those situations, because so many times the comments that I get on the website are the very same things that parents say to me when I first start to meet them and first start to work with them and their children. So Kate has one that came in yesterday, I believe, on the website, and from a mom named Jen, and she's going to read through that now, and then we're just going to talk about what our advice would be to her.
Okay, Laura, let's just say your website is called Teach Me to Talk, and she has DVDs that she has produced, and they are all about teaching your kids language, whether it be expressive language or receptive language. Or Laura, you can do your own little thing, but we should say that in case people haven't heard all this before.
That's right. And you can find out more information about that. And again, the website's name is teachmetotalk.com. And there are cute little characters on there that you can click. They're the covers of the DVDs and the little logos there. And you can click and get more information about that. And the first DVD is called Teach Me to Talk. And it's about expressive language strategies. And those are very simple things that you as parents can do at home to get your kid talking and look at how he's trying to communicate with you. And again, 6 really simple strategies, and they're the very first things that I introduce to parents that I work with when I get a child referred to me. And then the second 2 are deal with receptive language, and that means how a child understands language, and those are called Teach Me to Listen and Obey. And it was too much information for one DVD, so we split it into Volume 1 and Volume 2. Volume 1 is for children who are not really connecting socially with you yet, and for children who really have very little understanding of even simple things. They're not following simple directions like wait bye-bye or give me a kiss or, you know, doing, following your daily routine. So, or even, again, not even really participating in little social games with you. So that's Volume 1. And then Volume 2, Teach Me to Listen and Obey, 2 is for children who've moved beyond that are maybe understanding some things, but you're ready to bump them up to the next level. And the other thing that Teach Me to Listen and Obey 2 has on there is lots of disciplinary strategies. And I've taken the most common complaints or the most common challenges that I have with working with young children and talked about those and shown you some of those, and then talked about what the experts recommend as appropriate disciplinary techniques and just little things to kind of help shape behaviors. And those are helpful for parents at home as well as professionals who work with babies and toddlers like Kate and I do. And so I think the reason that you did this, Kate, is because the mom referred to that in her email, so as kind of a little introduction to that. So, or I don't know, maybe you just wanted me to do the little plug. Who knows? So anyway.
Yes, on both fronts. But I also want to get the call-in number out there in case anybody's listening live. We have this show is recorded, and a lot of people listen to it at their convenience. But we have a strange time today. We're usually Thursday at 6 o'clock. What are we, Eastern, Standard Eastern
time? We are Eastern time. I don't know, I think it's Standard Time this time of year. So 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time here, Friday, May 29th.
Okay, but anyway, the call-in number, if you're listening and you have a child or you may work with a child or you have some connection to a child who is language delayed and there's something you would like to ask, we'd love to answer the question to the best of our abilities. Our call-in number is 1-718-766-4332.
And today would be a great day for that because we don't have We have some things to talk about, but today would just be a perfect day if anybody's listening and would want to call in with a question. Would love to hear you.
So we're waiting, but in the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and read this recent email you received, Laura, and it says, I just discovered your podcast and DVD tonight, and I can't help but feel this is just the thing we need. My son is 20 months old and says only mama and sometimes dada, although sometimes they seem out of context. He says, hi. Oh, I'm sorry. Correction. Better get the computer closer.
Have your readers on today.
I do, but it's still not working for him. It's too far away. Here we go. He doesn't say hi, no, or bye, and very rarely does he ever wave unless we really prompt him. He's a great clapper, and he can understand almost everything we say.
Okay, so wait just a minute. So what words did she say that he has? She said he says mama, but it's very, very...
He only says mama and sometimes dada.
Okay, but she said sometimes that's out of a context, so meaning that he might just kind of babble it, right? I mean, that's how I take that, right?
I might wonder if he just doesn't say it sporadically, and it doesn't necessarily mean... I don't know. That's the kind of thing you get to ask in real life, and you have to wonder about this. But maybe that is what it says. He'll just pop it out, and maybe he is just babbling and doesn't really mean to refer to either mommy or daddy.
Yeah, that's how I take it when a parent says out of context. And sometimes I ask that of parents, too, don't you say? Because they'll say, he says mama, he says dada. And I'll say, does he do it meaningfully or, you know, is it just kind of random? And so many times, don't you have parents that say, oh, sometimes he just kind of says it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, oh, they're still just kind of babbling. That's not even probably a real word yet.
I usually ask, does if he's in bed and he wants out, does he call mama or dada?
Yeah.
Because to me that means, okay, he really gets it. And
he's got really, it, yeah.
Yeah, he's using it to call you into the room. And a lot of times those I'm not clear on do say no, he doesn't do that. You know, he cries or he plays or he does nothing to call. So anyway, shall I go on?
Yeah, and so he's 20 months and he has one word that is there, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
And or one and a half words, because we've got mama, dada, but nothing else. And those other words she's saying that he doesn't really say those. She's just put those in for examples, right?
Right. And okay. He only waves if they really, really prompt him, which, you know, we've talked about before. My assessment tool says 7 to 9 months on waving. So here's a 20-month-old, and they have to really, 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 really work to get him to wave. So
we wouldn't really count that yet, probably.
Probably
as an established
not.
Skill. You know, I would put that emerging. And again, 20 months just to be doing that, there may be more going on than just a little expressive delay here. Because that really is a gesture, and we would want kids, even sometimes kids who just have speech or just have expressive language as their only issue, they're still communicating with lots of gestures. And so that's a red flag to me from that mom.
Yeah.
Just kind of picking that apart. But go ahead.
And she does sound like she's paid a lot of attention. It looks like she's looked at some developmental charts because she's aware that, gee, we have to work really hard to get him to wave.
Right.
So that's made an impact on her. Says he's a great clapper and he can understand almost everything we say, follow instructions. For example, they can say, go get your red car and bring it to mommy, and has motor skills such as stacking small blocks. This is cute, parentheses. 14 is his record. I'm guessing it's her first baby. What do you think?
That's cute.
Yeah.
That's really cute, yeah.
Okay, should I keep going?
Yeah, keep going.
Okay, when
well,
we
that's
look.
Good he can, well, but that's good he's following directions, because I wouldn't have thought that. Just from you reading that initial thing, and I really did read this in a rush this morning as I was leaving, but that's good that he's following those kinds of directions, but he's not waving bye-bye. So that would make me wonder, what's going on there?
Right.
So.
Okay. Then she says, when we look at developmental charts, he seems all over the place. He tends to hold his hand out like he's saying, I don't know, but says ba-ba-ba. He just does this spontaneously. It's like a shrug. He does some imitation, but that's also rare. The crazy thing is, he's incredibly social, outgoing, playful, smiling, laughing. It's such a puzzle why he won't speak.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's great that she's noticing his social stuff, and she does sound like she's a mom who's done her homework a little bit with
right.
reading and thinking, okay, you know, he's got these prerequisite things. He's social. He's following some directions. So why no words yet?
Right. Put his hand out. I've had a lot of those kids, and I think it just means like, hey, I'm holding court here. You know, I'm
yeah.
with their hand out like, are you listening?
I don't know what to say, but
yeah.
I know that I've got to do something to get my attention. And I do think we kind of reinforce that a little bit with when you're asking a kid where something is, don't you stick your hands out like, where is it? Where
I
is it?
I always do. And kids do pick that up, and it's cute when they use it. Yeah. That's
yeah, and he sounds like he's responded to that with, I don't know. My hands are out. I'm trying. Yeah.
What am I supposed to say? Okay, then she says, one of our concerns is that he seemed to attempt a bit of language earlier on and now does not say those things anymore. That's the common refrain, isn't it? We
right,
hear that
yeah.
quite a bit. Our dog's name was something he attempted to say. Now if we point to the dog, he says nothing. When he was very young, less than 12 months of age, he would sort of say thank you, but it would come out as gunku.
Oh, I've heard that word before.
Yes, I have too. Now that is gone, too. Just when we think he's on his way, the attempted words disappear. We are just at our wit's end, worried about where he is currently developmentally, and where he should be, and more interestingly, where he was or seemed to be at one point. Our doctor says not to worry until he's two. I know you'll have something to say about that. And then his ears can be checked more thoroughly. It's not his hearing. This is, again, parentheses, she's adding, she'd like to say this to the doctor. It's not his hearing. He hears
yeah.
everything and understands most everything. But I'm insisting on a referral to some sort of interventionist. What do you recommend we ask or mention most specifically to someone in an evaluation? Yes, this is a very on top of it mother, isn't she?
Yeah.
Tell me what to say. What that I've told you, I guess she means what about the things that I've said thus far seems most alarming or worthy or more scrutiny. So she's asking, you know, of the things I've mentioned, what sticks out for you? And, hey, we're going to talk about that.
Or are
some of these things normal for stubborn 20-month-old boys? Thanks so much. The DVD looks like a great resource. She's
Aww.
Right. You do. If you're listening, the person, Jen, you need to buy the DVD because it'll give you lots of great examples of what to do. But we're also going to talk about that.
We are going to talk about it, but I will say one more thing about the DVDs. For parents, if you're listening to this or if you are reading on the website and you're hearing these ideas and then you try them and you think, that was supposed to go a little bit better, the DVD is a good resource because you can actually see what to do. And again, it's not just a clip of me talking. You actually see me working with kids. And I don't show just perfect little angelic two-year-olds who do everything that I ask them to do. You'll see there's some stinkers on there, too. And you just really, how to handle that? Because as a group, two-year-olds aren't always pleasant and cooperative, are they, Kate? And so there's some things that you can do to work with them to make it more fun and more interesting and kind of pull them in a little bit. And sometimes those things are much easier for you to duplicate at home after you've seen someone else do them. And then, more importantly, too, you'll figure out or learn from listening to the DVD why you need to do those things, and it'll make a little bit more sense. So, again, that's something that if you're having difficulty, you know, taking it from black and white or even from hearing us talk about it, you know, that's something that you could do. Okay, let's back up and talk about a couple of things. First of all, I really want to commend this mom, Jen, for knowing that, okay, he's 20 months old, but we should be further along than this. And she's got some good instincts, don't you think, Kate, with looking at what's going on. And she was really able to give us lots of information that would help us make some decisions about what we would tell her to do. I want to hear what you have to say about this, but I'm just going to treat this like this is a mom that I'm going in to do this assessment for, and this is the information she gives me. And we'll just kind of talk about it like we would a mom in real life and the things that, you know, we would tell her to do. And first of all, I do want to say I do think she should go ahead and get a referral to her state's early intervention program. Don't you agree with that, Kate?
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you only have one word by 20 months, you know, that's a red flag. And even though he is following some instructions, there's still some other, you know, like the not waving bye-bye, he really should be doing that. He, you know, and not that every kid's going to do something every single time, but I think she's having to work a little hard to get him to do a pretty basic communicative gesture. So that's a red flag to me in and of itself, don't you think?
Yes. She doesn't mention if he points. I'd kind of like to know that, if he's pointing to things that he wants. But she doesn't mention
and what he's trying to do when he wants something, if he's doing any other kind of gesture, you know, or, you know, if he's using jargon or trying to communicate, how does he express to her when he wants milk or when he wants to go outside or when he wants her to fix the toy that he, you know, that's broken. How, you know, those would be the kinds of things that we would ask her. And if she said he's not pointing or he's not really doing any of those things to communicate, you know, I would say, gosh, well, this isn't just really about talking. It's kind of an initiation problem. And then we would start to look at other reasons that he might not be using gestures too. I mean, do you want to chime in on that or no?
Well, I guess I would say this. I think she's, you know, somewhat concerned he's not waving, and then she goes on to talk about that he used to say some words.
Right.
But has lost some of those early words. Even if they were just rough approximations, he had them and he was using them somewhat consistently, it sounds like, and then poof, they were gone.
Right.
And I'm just going to be honest here. You know, I think one of the reasons, and this is a total theory, I don't know Jen from anybody, but I'm guessing she kind of realized, just as I'm thinking, you know, there's so much in the literature and in the news today about autism, and one of the things we see with autistic kids is that they can lose language that they had, you know, as
right.
they get be about 18 months.
Yeah.
A lot of times parents begin to realize, wait a minute, you know, he used to say doggy, he used to say bye-bye, he used to say ball, and slowly over time those kids tend to lose some language. And I think this mom, being the obvious good mother that she is, started to think, wait a minute, he's lost some words. You know, he used to
right.
say these words. And then she's looked at developmental charts, which is a reasonable thing to do. And I think that's why she says the crazy thing is he's incredibly social, outgoing, playful, smiling, and laughing.
Right.
It's such
right.
a puzzle. And, you know, had I not heard that part, I would have kind of wondered, you know, could this end it? And that lack of a consistent use of early gestures is another thing that can sometimes go with autism, almost always go with autism.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, I would have worried, and then she says he's very social, and I think I work with a child right now who I'm playing speech therapist with, and he fits this description very, very, very well. The mother said a lot of those things. He had some early words, and he, too, is really a cute, social, outgoing, playful, happy little fella, and he had the, you know, the loss of language along with that. I think he had probably, his gestures were a little bit more consistent than this guy. He's a few months older.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's all I want to say about that part. Do you want to talk about
The other thing I was going to say is lots of parents who have children who do go on to be diagnosed with apraxia, or the more formal childhood apraxia of speech, really indicate that in their histories of their children, too, is that, you know, he was saying a handful of words, you know, 12 months, 15 months, and all of a sudden those disappeared. So it's not always associated with autism, but losing words is never a part of typical language development. You don't see that. You don't read that. If anybody tells you that, I'd like to know what their source is on that. We had a mom tell us that a pediatrician told her that. Do you remember really early on one of our shows when a mom said that the pediatrician said, or maybe it was in an email, maybe it wasn't on the show, but that she felt so much better after talking to her pediatrician because the pediatrician said all kids lose words. And that's just not true. Do you find that to be true at all?
No. If they, I mean, they might not use it as regularly as they do when they first get it, because they're kind of excited. You know, it's like, oh,
yeah,
I have something new. But they still use the word. They don't lose the ability to use it. They may lose the interest in it, but you're going to hear it periodically. Yeah.
Well, and you're going to hear it when the situation arises. And I'm not talking about an unusual word like that would be so situational, like, oh, gosh, help me think of a word, Kate. Moon. That, you know, you have to pretty much see the moon to say it. I'm talking about words like mama, bye-bye, mm-hmm, cookie, shoe. You know, if your kids have those words and then lose them, that is not a part of typical language development, and that would be a red flag to an early interventionist or a speech pathologist, and it should be a red flag to the pediatrician. And let's move on and talk about that pediatrician a little bit. The whole wait, I just hate that, because I do think it lulls parents into a false sense of, oh, it's not a big deal, it's going to go away on its own. And then sometimes parents end up waiting far too long for initiating the whole intervention process. You know, the programs that we work with, Kate, our early intervention program in our state, every state in the United States is federally mandated to have an early intervention program, and that's for children birth to 3 or 36 months. So that program ends the day that you turn 3. So if your pediatrician tells you to wait until you're 2, and then you end up, say, not going back for that 2-year-old checkup until they're 2 years, 4 months, and then he says, well, let's get his hearing checked, and that takes another 3 months, and so you're at 2 years, 7 months, and then you start the whole process, you could darn well end up having lost 9 months of that, of your whole, your child's whole time between 2 and 3, just with how long everything takes to get scheduled and get done. So I think that a good mom like this, who's feeling internally some angst about it, kind of knows, no, I need to go ahead and not wait, and I need to go ahead and pursue this evaluation now. And so many people on the website will say, how do I get my child evaluated? I think the very best resource for a mom in this situation and for a child with a toddler is to take advantage of your state's early intervention program. And you can get the information about that by using a search engine like Google or Yahoo and just type in your state's name plus the words early intervention. And you should be able to come up with the website from that search and get some information with phone numbers or other contact ways to contact them and go ahead and get an evaluation. In every state, the evaluation is absolutely free, and that usually consists of, first of all, a person like a service coordinator, which you used to be, Kate, a long, long, long time ago before you took the more, before you started working directly with children as a developmental interventionist. But they, you know, usually that's kind of a little interview process that the service coordinators do, and then you'll actually meet with a person that's some kind of therapist, either if speech is your only concern, in most states I think it is a speech pathologist, or someone who's been trained with using those standardized assessments, and they evaluate your child and let you know whether or not he qualifies. And you do have to have a percentage of delay or a certain amount below what is considered normal to qualify in a state. But it is such a painless process, and I think people, you know, kind of want to put that off, just, you know, thinking, oh, this is going to go away, or maybe I don't need to do this yet. But you really could end up losing lots and lots of time waiting, and then to get the process started, it's not always as quick as we would hope.
Right. As far as if anybody's listening and thinking, oh, I wonder what that costs, in Kentucky and in Indiana, which I've worked in both systems at one point or another, and I would guess for the most part most states are set up pretty much the same way Kentucky is. It's really kind of a sliding scale fee, so for lower income families it's free, and it goes up. But even if you're at the highest payment schedule as far as the family share part of the First Step services, it's really much less than paying your copay on insurance. So, you know, as far as, just thought I'd mention that it really is a very affordable thing to do if you're concerned about your child's development. So
it is, and I think that most states, and like our state, you, even if your income is a little higher than that, but you're having difficulty you know, because of a job loss or whatever's happened, there are always ways to kind of negotiate, even around that small fee. So don't let cost be prohibitive when you're deciding whether or not you're going to follow through. It's much cheaper than if you did it, like you said, privately. And the other thing that's great about these programs is so many of the therapists that work in these programs just specialize in babies. So if you take your child to another speech pathologist, even at a children's clinic or a children's hospital, they may their experience and expertise may really be with older children, with preschoolers or school-age kids. And so unless you get somebody who really specializes in early intervention and really knows the milestones and can really teach you the things that work with itty-bitty kids, you still may not be getting the very best that you can do. And I know some states, I get comments on the website all the time from all over the country, and sometimes people are complaining a little bit about their early intervention programs and that they don't feel like they have good therapists in there. And I suppose that that can differ from state to state, but people who love to work with babies and toddlers and really know babies and toddlers are almost always involved with their early intervention programs in their state. So, you know, don't let that whole thing fool you. You know, just being a speech pathologist is just like being a doctor. You really would not go to your general practitioner for something very, very specialized. You know, go ahead and do open heart surgery on me today. He probably has the skills and he could probably wing it, but it's not the same as if, you know, you went to the cardiologist or, you know, the surgeon who specializes in that. So, and that's probably not a great example, but I just want to say, you know, don't just pick the speech pathologist out of the phone book. You know, really do your homework and make sure that you are getting someone who understands and really knows the milestones and really knows how to work with really young, young children.
Shall we go back to this email from?
You mentioned you raised that apraxia flag, Laura, and really that it would be more what I was thinking. To me, this little boy, not unlike the little boy I currently see, which I'm not saying I would say this to the mother, but I would be thinking, could this be that he used to say gunku for thank you, and then he quit saying that? To me, that kind of makes me wonder, okay, this little guy's getting a little older. Perhaps he's beginning to realize that gunku is not how everybody's saying thank you to him. And so, you know, that's kind of inhibited his desire to try and say those words that he used to say that were so far off, but now he realizes, I'm not really comfortable, you know, with that. So,
yeah, it could be that, or it could be that he's just lost it.
Yeah.
It's just gone. He just can't get the motor plan, and by that I mean getting it from the part of his brain that thinks that's that word that I need to say all the way around it neurologically to his little mouth to be able to pop out that word. And, you know, that's what apraxia is. It's the lack of the ability to speak when you want to speak and recall the word that you need to say and to get it from brain to mouth and make it actually work out. And again, there's nothing really structurally wrong with those kids' mouths. It's just that difficulty planning and executing speech. So, but he's young. A lot of speech pathologists and pediatric neurologists or developmental pediatricians don't often like to give that formal diagnosis until a child is a little older, say nearing three. So, again, sometimes we treat these kids and we think, oh, he's got these red flags for apraxia, but we may not call it that yet because we're just going to kind of put some strategies in place and use the therapy techniques that are useful for facilitating speech and language with those little guys. But, you know, we might not call it that or give them that formal diagnosis yet. And so that goes to your point about, I'm not really saying this to his mom yet.
Right.
And so why would you not want to say it to his mom yet? Would you just not want to create alarm?
First of all, I'm not a speech-language pathologist, so I'm really out on a limb when I start saying, could it be apraxia? Now, have I done that? Yeah, I have on occasion gone there, and I always, you know, give my disclaimer about, really, I'm not qualified to say this, but I certainly have worked with a lot of kids, and some have gone on to get formal diagnoses from those who are certainly qualified to say that's what it is. But, you know, you do kind of become familiar with, they do have these various red flags, and all put together, it kind of looks like it, and there is no real test for apraxia, is there?
Right.
I mean,
no. Well, there are some test batteries that you can use. There's the Kaufman speech praxis test, but again, that's administered by a speech-language pathologist. It's not like that they're going to give you a blood test or do an MRI or anything that would be objective. It pretty much would be subjective, meaning that a person would have to know enough about apraxia and know enough about young kids and know enough about typical language development to say, he's got these red flags here.
Right.
And again, the main organization that really disseminates information about apraxia is apraxia-kids.org. It's the North American Childhood Apraxia Speech Association, maybe. I can't remember all of their title, but they really have cautioned clinicians not to formally diagnose apraxia in children under 3 and defer to suspected childhood apraxia of speech. So I think that gives lots of speech pathologists cold feet when it comes to that diagnosis, because one, they don't want their professional colleagues saying, I can't believe she's calling this 2-year-old apraxic when he's not even been in therapy 2 months yet.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really know what's going on. And a lot of people will say that they have to have a vocabulary of 50 to 100 words before you can formally diagnose that. For some of those kids, that doesn't happen till well after 3.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be another reason. I sometimes don't say it anymore until I am really sure that's what it is. I might tell a mom that I'm thinking that I'm leaning to that. But the other thing is that I want to say to any therapist that might be listening, just because you're not saying it doesn't mean that you're not gearing your treatment to the strategies that work with kids with apraxia. So just because, again, that you're not fully disclosing everything that's going on when you're thinking it doesn't mean that, again, that you're not going to treat it like it's that way, because sometimes, or most of the time, just the things that you would do, just those standard talk to him, narrate his play, those kinds of things are not going to work for a kid that's apraxic. You're going to want to put some sign language in there, you know, get some alternative communication stuff going. You're going to want to help with motor planning, which I think signs do a great job with that, because it makes you use those little hands. And that's another thing that would make me think that might be a probable thing with this little guy, is because of his lack of gestures.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when children have verbal apraxia, they have global apraxia or dyspraxia too, meaning that they might have some coordination issues with other parts of their body. And so sometimes you don't see those gestures coming in on time, or play is a big thing that could be affected with those kids that are apraxic too, that they have real difficulty sequencing things that come next in play, or even doing those fine motor little things like hooking the trains together or those kinds of things. I don't think about stacking blocks as real difficult. So I don't know, Kate, you can probably answer that more than me. You know, and let me say, too, that there are lots of apraxic kids that are verbally apraxic that don't necessarily have difficulties with those other fine motor things, too. So just because you're having trouble verbally with motor planning doesn't necessarily mean that you're having trouble in other areas too.
Right. But I would say, yeah, I'd be wondering about that with him, and I wouldn't say it, but I would kind of think, we'll see over time if I guessed right about that. So,
because sometimes you will have a kid that you're thinking that in the assessment, and then you look up 3 months later and they have tons of words and have learned to sign pretty well, and they're using gestures pretty well, and they really just kind of needed a jump start. And so then, you know, and we've had this conversation before, was he really apraxic? Was that an appropriate working diagnosis, or was he just language delayed? You know, or did we get in there quick enough and do the right things enough? Did we really kind of help change how he's wired? And, you know, that's the whole point of early intervention. And the research tells us the earlier we work with these kids and the earlier we change how parents interact and change the ways that we try to facilitate those words, that we can literally change how their little brains work. You know, that's why we do this job. So, you know, that's a philosophical thing that I think about all the time, and I know we've talked about that before, not necessarily on the show, but, you know, was he a praxic or wasn't he? Was he showing these motor planning things or not? You know, so.
We like to think that, well, they may have been and it worked, because
right.
We've both had, I know you have, and I've had some where they did. They just can't believe. Saw one of those this morning who just, he had a lot of these red flags. I never said it. I just thought, looks like it could be. Did what I've seen work in the past, and he just took off. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Wow. You know, the mom was saying they had gone to visit friends or family, and the child that they went to see was just almost two, and that he is pretty much nonverbal, has a word or two, and was where the little boy that I now see is when he started. And she said, I had forgotten, you know.
Yeah.
As if to say, he is talking so much more. And I tell her a lot, he's made great progress. He's made great progress, because
yeah.
I would not have expected, and it was clear on day one that he was a bright little boy. He understood very well. But say it? No. But
he couldn't, yeah.
Yeah, he got the signs, and he did not seem to have that global apraxia where he was a good signer pretty much early on. You know, he got that quickly, and so I don't know if it's a matter of degree or what, but for him it all worked and came along beautifully. And we love to have those, because it just makes us feel like we're so good at what we do.
Well, and it makes it worth going to work in the morning.
Right.
You know, if I had to work with kids all day, every day, that we didn't expect to get better,
mm-hmm.
why would you do it? You know, there would be no motivation. So, and again, I want to back up to one thing you said. You know, apraxia, there are degrees. A kid who just has some really mild motor planning things, and, you know, when you look at the diagnostic list for apraxia, even, you know, from a clinician who would really look for motor planning and who really thinks about that for nearly every kid that I see, you know, and I really believe it's probably at the root of more early communication problems than other people do. And so, but even a kid that I would think has those characteristics may not have every one of those red flags. You know, there may be some things that are going great with that. And so there would be degrees. You know, when you get kids that have every stinking one of those, you think, gosh, he probably, you know, is going to be, even when he starts to talk, it's going to be a slow go, and he's probably going to be more severely challenged than a kid who had just a few of those. So I do believe apraxia is one of the conditions that is more like a spectrum, or more, you know, more varying degrees of severity. And, of course, if you start out with a milder case, your prognosis is going to be a lot better. And if the younger your parents kind of implement the things that you need to do, your outcome's probably going to be better, even for a kid with severe issues, than if your parents had done nothing at all and waited. And that's the same with any diagnosis, with any developmental challenge, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, that's why there is an early intervention program, because they know the outcome's better if you start early. I mean, almost everybody's heard that about autism, but it's really true about most
everything.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Every developmental delay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you start early, and even if you have therapists that just come in that say, oh, I don't necessarily need to see you every week, we just need to give you some ideas and suggestions. Or even if you're, you know, and it breaks my heart for the parents who are out there kind of looking for things and maybe have a borderline kid, you know, a kid who's not going to qualify for services. That doesn't mean that you know, but they're still a little under where you would want them to be. That doesn't mean that you just sit on your hands and wait. You know, get busy, implement some strategies, and, you know, make some changes in how you play with them and the things that you ask them to do. And, again, that's not sitting down with a two-year-old doing worksheets. And that's not, you know, here, we're going to learn the alphabet today. You're going to say every one of these letters. You're implementing all of these developmental skills, whether it be language or motor skills or cognitive skills. You know, you do all of that through play. And so read on the website, teachmetotalk.com, for ideas. And, again, you can always check out those DVDs if you need to see some of those things in action. But earlier is always better than later. And I would think, just based on what this mom said, back to the email, that he would qualify for services. He would qualify in our state anyway.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, I have no doubt that this scenario would describe quite a few of the kids who do qualify for services, even though she thinks that his receptive skills, what he understands, appears to be very good. Just his expressive language delay, the mama sometimes, dada every once in a while, and really nothing else would qualify him for speech. Or DI if we couldn't get a speech therapist. But really speech. So, yeah, he would qualify.
I think so, too. And the things that she should be saying, you know, one of her questions is what should she highlight? And it would be that he had some words and that he lost them, that he's not using gestures all the time, and that he, you know, seems smart, so you wonder what's going on here. You know, I need some help here getting these words to come in, because otherwise it looks like he would have already started talking by now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she should go ahead and pursue it. And I think she was great when she said, it's not his hearing. He hears everything.
Right.
So that's good that she didn't fall back on that. You know, and you can really get a pretty good audiological assessment on a 20-month-old if the audiologist is skilled and has lots of experience and practice and kind of some good instincts with working with some young children. And that leads us to talk about who we hope to have on the show in a few weeks is an audiologist here in Louisville and really talk about.
Guess what?
we may
still get her because I'm going to be persistent, but she is not in Louisville anymore.
You know, I kind of thought that after we got off the phone, because we have another mutual friend who's friends with her.
Mm-hmm.
But
she's still practicing, I think.
Yeah. And so, I think we can probably track her down.
Right. Great audiologist and does a lot of young kids. So we were discussing having a show about hearing and all those things that are related to early language development that relate to ears and hearing. And I said, let's get Sue Windmill on the show. And then I called her today, and she's moved to Mississippi, of all places, Miss Laura.
My home state.
So we will hunt her down and see if she won't be on, because she's very knowledgeable and fun to talk to. So we'll see if we can't get her on in the next couple weeks to enlighten us from an audiologist's perspective on hearing and how that relates to early language stuff.
Yeah, and so I don't think you necessarily have to wait until 2 to even get that audiological assessment. So if I would tell that mom to go ahead and do that. And if I were assessing that child today, and with any child that we assess, you know, by the time that I get them, they have had their primary level evaluation in Kentucky, and that's just the first assessment that lets a parent know if they're eligible for services or not, and so, or if they qualify and meet those eligibility guidelines. And most of the time when there's a speech concern, one of the things that they go ahead and recommend is have their hearing checked, because if it is hearing loss, and it is significant, that's a pretty, you know, not easy fix, and I'm not trying to minimize the difficulties that children with hearing impairments have, but you do pop the hearing aids in and move forward. You know, that's something objective. They can tell you that. It's not like another condition that you either know, you know, you wonder if that's what it could be, hearing loss. You get the test, you know. So we do want to have Sue talk about how to test young children, the kinds of things that they do, and what to do if we continue to suspect it. And I want to talk with her about ear infections, because that is just a big, big issue with lots of the children, even on my caseload right now. And, you know, what the guidelines are, the recommendations are that audiologists believe about when you use tubes and when you don't. So I hope we can track her down and she'll agree to do it.
I will try and follow up.
Yeah, that sounds good. But anyway, back to Jen. I would go ahead and do your state's early intervention program. I would go ahead and get a hearing assessment, and I would go ahead and start searching for information for things that you can do with him. Signing would be something that I would implement right now, just some really simple signs to help him communicate and help him learn, oh, I've got to do something to get something. You can look on the website in the sign language category, and there are some articles that tell you how to implement that. There are also tons of good resources for teaching sign language. Signing Times, the video series, is just a darling set of DVDs or videos. And in Kentucky, it comes on PBS. It's like very early on Sunday mornings. But in other states, you can look to see if your PBS station might show that as well. And you can pick up Signing Times videos on eBay cheaply, or lots of libraries have those. And then, Kate, what's that other one that you give out? What's
Sign With
tape?
Me.
Yeah, and that's another good one.
Cute early. They're kind of geared for kids to watch, and I'm always hesitant to say, here, have your 18-month-old watch this. But my disclaimer is if your child watches some TV or movies anyway,
yeah.
And if not, then I try and encourage the parents to sit through one viewing, and they're so repetitive that it does help parents learn the signs as well as the kids. And they're both of those are very good about using most, if not all, of the signs we use early on, Laura. You know, the early words
yeah.
that kids are going to use to communicate anyway. You
right.
just pair the sign with it. And I do find, you know, I have periodically parents who worry, well, why would I want to use signs? I want them to talk. And they think that, you know, we're teaching them to be little signers and not little talkers. And I always say, watch, the first words he says will be these words that were, these signs that were, and words, you know, paired with the words that we're pushing right now. And it almost always does work out that way.
It does. And mm-hmm. that really, research has proved that hypothesis wrong, that kids who sign don't talk. You know, research tells us it's exactly the opposite. Those kids do talk. And when they've done studies with kids, normally developing kids who don't have speech problems, they've actually said more and talked earlier than the kids who were kind of the control kids that signs were not introduced. So there's tons of good research to support that we use that. And it's always, I mean, I never see a kid that we don't introduce some signs with. You know, a late talker or a nonverbal kid when I get there. I might get a kid that's older, that it's just kind of an articulation issue, and that's a separate thing. But I never work with a nonverbal kid that I don't implement signs. Do you, Kate?
No. I call it my first line of defense.
Yeah.
So
I mean, and it's easy. The other thing is, you know, you can't make a kid talk, but you sure can make them sign.
Yeah.
You can reach
hard
down.
To pull the words out, but you can help them move their little hands, can't you?
You can,
yeah,
and it
yeah.
doesn't have to be in a real dictatorial, aggressive way. You can make it playful and fun, and again, just giving kids that power that they learn, I've got to do it to get something. It's such a fun thing for parents to see that happen with a kid, and for kids' little faces to light up, like, I did it. I got that cookie because I put my hands together just this way. And especially if it's a kid that doesn't have receptive language problems and that's pretty smart anyway, they catch on to those signs so quickly, and it does alleviate the pressure for everybody, for mom and dad who are frustrated that they don't know what he wants, and for a kid who's trying really hard but physiologically, for whatever reason, is not talking yet. Signs are such a good tool. And, you know, I want to just say shame, shame, shame if there's any speech pathologist listening that doesn't believe that and that doesn't use signs regularly in your practice, because it really, again, you know, I love how you put that.
You
in
want to say shame. I want to say get a new job. Move along. You're not good at it. Move along. No, I know, because it's so effective. And I do haven't run across one of those speech therapists in a while, really. It seems like more and more and more and more get it now. But 8-10 years ago, I used to hear some say that, and I think, I'll bite my tongue.
Mm-hmm. You know, and usually it's that I get it from comments on the website.
Oh.
That's where it's not really in person anymore.
Okay.
Or it might be a grandmother who walks in and says, you know, why are you doing that? That's crazy. We want him to talk. You're going to make him lazy.
Oh.
You know, and so again.
Well, and Laura, you touched on this. I'm sorry. I'm cutting you off. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, I don't mean
well, I was just going to say that I think for all minimally verbal young kids, it's effective. But I think for apraxic kids, boy, does it really. I think it helps so much with the motor planning piece of speech because they're moving their little hands and they're working their little brains to do that. And I think it also really, really helps take the pressure off of those kids.
Yeah.
Apraxic kids really, you know, and obviously this mom is, you know, very in tune and very involved, and I'm guessing she is saying, dog, dog, you know, tell me dog, it's the dog, over, tell it, say it, and, you know, we do some of that in therapy, and no, we do a lot of that in therapy.
Yeah.
However,
but when you, we do it, yeah.
Yeah, and when you put the pressure on an apraxic kid, it just makes them that so much harder for them to do it. And,
right.
You know, another classically apraxic thing is we call them pop-out words. A child will, you know, all of a sudden say, I want a donut! And you think, oh, my gosh, where did that come from? He said it one time. And, then, and you know, moms will repress that. And I say, I believe you. You know,
yeah.
on those kids, I say, I've seen it happen. It does happen. It's like something, the transmission fires and it works and it comes out. But they couldn't say even donut again if their life depended on it. You know, and it's very hard to understand. It just, it is what it is. But those kids feel so much pressure when we are pushing them and when parents
yeah.
are pushing them to say the words. I feel like it really kind of takes that pressure off for them to say it, say it, say it. And before they know it, because they're really concentrating on, okay, she wants me to put my little fingers together and tell her more. But what they're concentrating on is putting their little fingers together, and we're modeling that. And with that, we're pairing more, tell me more, more. Before they know it, they're saying more, they're saying mine, or they're saying eat, or they're saying those things that we're modeling for them. But they're able to do it because we didn't just say, tell me, say it.
Right.
You know?
And when we're saying, tell me, say it, there's just not as much pressure because we're on the floor and we're playing and it's about something that's so fun and we've learned the tricks with your smiling and you're leaning forward and you're looking expectantly rather than, tell me, say it, say it. You know, it's just a different kind of approach, and the thing that we do in therapy, too, is kind of work them up to that and get their little bodies ready and their little mouths ready. You don't start out with, say it, say it, say it. You know, we've gotten them into playing. You're kind of in the groove. You're in the zone, and that makes it easier for kids to pop out those words, too.
Right.
So, again, that's why sometimes it's a little easier for that to be done kind of in therapy than even a mom and dad do it until moms and dads have participated in enough sessions and kind of learn the tricks and learn, okay, I'm going to work him up to this. Here we go. He's ready. He's ready. And, again, that takes some instinct and some kind of watching to see when kids are like that. You know, I wanted to go back to one more thing about this email. You know, and it could be that this little boy said some things, like you were talking about, pop-out words, one or two times, and mom thought they were real words,
mm-hmm.
when really they weren't real words yet. And that happens a lot with apraxic kids because parents will – I got an email. I wonder if I can find it. It's from a few weeks ago that a mom said – she said she has 40 words, but she only uses 10 of those consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think – No. She has 10 words,
uh-huh.
and she has said 30 other words, but not consistently. And even when you're reporting things like that to a therapist or to a doctor in a busy context, just the way that you say that, because for a mom to say, she's 22 months old and has 40 words, you could really blow that off and think she's doing fine,
mm-hmm.
unless you hear the 10 words that she says consistently. You know, so sometimes it really is kind of the way that you present a child's history that might, especially with a pediatrician, perk up someone's ears.
Right, because they are not really schooled in dealing with early language development. If they heard 40 words, they say, hey, that's pretty close to where they should be. Oh, that's fine.
Right, and
mm-hmm.
and really kind of blow that off. And but if you go in and say she has 10 words that she says all the time, you know, that's quite different. I'm looking for that. I can't find that email because I thought that was very interesting. And my comment, or actually it was a comment on the website. I keep using those terms interchangeably, but I don't necessarily mean that. But my advice to that mom was you need to change how you present this so that your daughter gets a referral, because that's what she was afraid about, is that the pediatrician was not going to refer her on. So, and that's one thing that I liked about that mom that we just read, that we've worked through her comment, is that she is smart enough to say, what should I say? How should I present this? Because sometimes that does really make a difference with,
right.
Not necessarily with a therapist, but certainly with a pediatrician, a busy pediatrician who's going to see your kid for 5 seconds to decide whether you
there's
need to be referred
or
not.
Well, and let me just say, in Kentucky, and I assume it's the same way in all the states, but you don't really need a referral from your pediatrician. A lot of parents think that, but they don't have to have that. If this mom or the other mom who talked about her little girl having 40 occasional words, they can call the First Steps, or ours is First Steps, they can call their early intervention program and say, hey, I'm concerned about my child's language development, and get an initial assessment. And usually if the services are recommended, most pediatricians are on board if that's the case, even if they didn't really start the referral process themselves or even really agree with it. They usually need to sign off on it, but once it's been recommended by a speech-language pathologist, they usually agree. So you don't have to have the pediatrician on board. Laura, let's say on this little Jen's little boy that, you know, he, although I would totally 110% agree that we're going to push the signs, we might also focus some on doing some kind of bigger movements with his arms and with his little body, because although he's going to greatly benefit from the use of those signs, he's not going to be probably an automatically good signer, because if he's having troubles waving or that's a big effort for him, he's going to get the signs, I have no doubt, but sometimes we kind of warm them up and kind of get their little minds and bodies ready with bigger movements, you know.
Well, she says he's a great clapper, so that's exactly where I would start, and I would have him, you know, really clap for more, and then we shape those little hands, into pointing those little fingers, you know, toward each other for the sign for more. But you're right, you know, and the other thing I would really work on with him is imitating. And, again, that would start with imitating big body movements. You know, I would stand up and jump, or we would do ring around the rosies, you know, and we're going to hold hands and walk around. And, you know, I'm going to fall down on the floor, and I want him to fall down on the floor. You know, when we're popping bubbles, I'm not going to just take my little, you know, pointer finger and pop it. I'm going to smack it really hard on the floor and see if he can copy popping on the floor like that, you know. And again, those big things, that's what I was talking about before when I was saying, you know, just kind of your instincts and how you kind of work them up to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we would do with gestures too. And the great thing about when you get a kid that can use and imitate a lot of gestures, then he's ready usually to move on to imitating a lot of sounds. And so for parents that are listening whose kids aren't imitating words, back up and see if he's going to imitate some actions first, because if he can't do that, then you really have to teach to imitate first. And that's a good therapy goal. I spend, you know, time doing that in play, seeing if I can get a kid to imitate the things that I do with whatever toys we're using too. So that's a good place to start, and that's a very, very good point.
Thank you. I know you would have done it, you just didn't mention it. So I was just thinking, if Jen is really listening, you know, don't be discouraged. I would, you know, he probably will sign more, or at least clap initially, and then she can, like you said, take his little fingers and show him. I have a lot of kids who will sign more with, like, two-fisted hands.
Yeah, and
you
that's
know, we're
okay.
Never, yeah, we're never picky about, you know, as long as we can tell what it is. And, you know, as they do get better and make some progress, sometimes I call it cleaning it up. I'll try and, you know, get a little closer on the signs and be a little bit pickier about what I'm going to accept as a good enough sign. But in the beginning, you know, if they're making any effort or we can tell it all, it's like, yay, you did it! Because we're all about keeping them happy and, you know, motivated to keep going, to keep trying. Because I always say you can't fix it if they're not doing it, you know.
Yeah, or if you're not even paying attention with you.
Right.
You know, you want to keep them with you and involved and happy and participating, so you certainly want to do that.
Right.
The other thing that I would do with him, since he is so social and outgoing and playful, is really use lots of those little games. So we talked about ring around the rosies, ride a little horsey. Also, he probably, since he's a 20-month-old little boy, would love those little play sounds that we do, animal sounds, car and truck noises. I would start with lots of those things, too. So you're not necessarily starting out with words. You're going to back up and start with imitating those actions and imitating those early sounds. A good one that I can almost always get a kid to do, unless there are pretty significant things going on, is pant like a dog. That is, I try that in assessments with nonverbal kids and with kids that aren't great imitators. That is just a trick that I haven't used my whole career, but when I finally figured it out, because a breathy sound is a sound that a lot of kids can do, you know, like a
kids like that. Like the dog is hot.
Yeah, pants like a dog.
Yeah.
You know, and that really, I mean, that's a great one. And when I can get a kid to do that, I think, gosh, we're on our way here. I can get him to do something with his mouth that's funny that he's going to want to do for his parents. Parents usually think that's adorable for a kid who's not ever imitated anything. Kids see dogs all the time, so it'll be in context. You know, they'll have an opportunity to practice that, and that is kind of an early thing that I get kids to do. We get kids, too, to imitate giving kisses, you know, with a smack. We get them to, help me think of some more, Kate. Any other little animal sounds?
I'll tell you one I do early on, which I guess I don't know if it's a word or just a sound effect, but I do boom early on a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because boys love things that go boom. So
yeah. Yesterday I had those little flying rockets, and a mom said, pow, when we shot my rockets off. And I thought, oh, I used to use pow all the time, and I stopped using that. That's a great early word.
I use it with my Elmo puzzle, and I always think my parents are going to think I'm being aggressive, but they can pop it out. You know, because it's a little foam puzzle, and
yeah.
I hold it up, and I say, get it, tell it. Pow! And a lot of little boys can get that out. It's been the first word on more than one of my little clients is pow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so any little thing that you can do like that make it fun and he's going to want to imitate you, that's where I would start with him as far as therapy goes, too. Well, we didn't even have to get to any other question today because we used the whole darn time talking about this one thing, which is a lot like our real life conversations too, huh?
Yeah, then it's okay, gotta go, call you in an hour, bye.
Yeah, I'll take a Diet Coke and a taco. Yeah.
Oh well, we do spend a lot of time, and that's why I get to play speech therapist, because Laura has been showing me the way for about 10 years now.
You're funny. Well, you have great ideas too, and I love getting your perspective with this. And sometimes you say things that I think, gosh, why didn't I think of that? That was great. I'm going to use that. So, the one thing that we didn't say today that you always say about signing that you didn't say today is that signs are great for slowing parents down.
Right.
You know, for making them say the word over and over and over.
And that's a hard thing to do. I mean, we do it because we've done it for so long and, you know, we've forced ourselves to learn it, but I have the most well-intentioned parents, and I'm constantly reminding them, too many words, slow it down, one word,
yeah.
One word. And if they only know 5 signs, and I always say from the get-go, don't get really good at signing. I don't want you using 75 signs.
Yeah, or trying to sign every word in a thing. I'll have parents that'll say, oh, I took sign language in college,
yeah.
Or, you know, and they'll sit there and sign, I want more cookies, please. And I think, for heaven's sake, just sign cookie.
Yeah.
You know, just sign please. We're not going to turn this into, you know, sometimes parents will say, like, oh, I want this to be his second language. And No. You want him to talk.
Yeah, we'd be happy with more cookie or please, any one of those.
Pick one. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't need them all. But, yeah, I do think it really does that. You know, it really helps parents break the habit of using way too many words if they're really
right.
Trying to get their kids to use any words. So
yeah.
I didn't say that. You're right.
And I love that. I love it when you say it. And I'm glad I could remind you of that today because it's a very good point.
Okay.
Well, all right, well, we're done, and next week we're going to be back on Thursday at 6, and I will again be on the road, but hopefully halfway to our vacation destination by Thursday, but we're still going to have the show, and would love to have you back then.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you later. Have a good week. Bye.
Bye.